Merry Christmas, y'all.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, happy birthday for Jesus. And remember, if someone says happy holiday, you say yes, it's a very holy day. So just keep that in mind. Please open your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 8 through 32. And our message this morning is settling the score. And we've broken our message into three parts: the kings, the killing, and the kindred. And as you know, Saul has died, just as Samuel told him. The prophet Samuel told him, "You will die, and so will your son." Oh, yes. Anyone who needs a Bible, the ushers will take care of you. So Saul has died, and Jonathan has died, and his brother has died, just as Samuel had said. And David, you would think, with his enemy being gone, that he would be rejoicing. "I can go home. Everything's great. Now I'm going to be king." You know, who wouldn't want to be king? But instead, he has truly a godly heart. And do you hear the ringing? You could probably bring me down just a little bit. The overall volume. My volume. Yeah, thank you, sir. Okay, appreciate that. So anyways, he writes this song that just is lamenting, and he says, listen, teach this to everyone. Everyone's to learn this song. And of course, the song spoke very highly of Saul, and he spoke of not letting it get outside the camp of Israel, anything that has happened, not one single negative thing. And that's the right heart. And we talked about that last week. Listen, our heart we should never revel in someone else's plight, even your enemy. If your enemy falls into hard times, you should pray for them. You should have that heart. And we're going to look at that even in a little bit more intimate detail today. And so David asked a very important question, though, during that lament, during that song he wrote. He asked three times. He says, "Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Oh, how the mighty fall." And we looked at the fact that the way the mighty fall is little by little, bit by bit. And that's how we grow, and that's how we fall. And of course, right after that, it's mentioned that, you know, David had his two wives. And then, as we're going to see in the next chapter, he gains many more wives. And that's not good. So this chapter, this chapter is about settling the score, getting even, making things right in one's own mind. I ran across an interesting quote. It says this: when a man steals your wife, there is no better revenge than to let him have her. Think about it. I mean, that's actually pretty deep. Because what does that say about her, that she could be stolen? So, yeah, you get it. Okay, I don't have to explain it. But I thought that was interesting. Y'all can be like, "That was interesting." Okay. On the way home. "Hey, honey." No. Okay. Verse 8. Let's look at verse 8. "But Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Isbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him to Mahanaim." Now, it's important to know who the players are. You almost are going to need a player's card, player cards. We're going to need, like, change, because there's some interesting characters here. Now, remember, Abner, his name simply means son of Ner. And that's what it says. Abner was the son of Ner. But Abba meaning father, Ner, so his father was Ner. Now, Ishbosheth, his name means man of shame. Now, there are some commentators that believe that Isbosheth was actually an illegitimate child of Saul. We don't know that. Or maybe it was from one of his, not his wives, but his concubines. But nevertheless, that's a horrible name to walk around with, right? Hey, man of shame. It's like, great, thanks. But that was his name. And He was the Abner was the cousin of Saul, and so also being the commander of his army, he knew David. He knew David. Why? Because the Saul's army were all there 20 years ago when Goliath was there, and David was his little pipsqueak, and he ran up there and he took out. So Abner was there. He knows who David is. He's heard about how Samuel proclaimed that God had anointed him. He knows that Jonathan said, David is anointed to be king, not me. So they've had a long relationship, and we're going to look at that a little bit more. But they are going to look at trying to settle a score. And it's a score that's in their heart, not in David's heart. David doesn't have a score to settle. Verse 9. And he made him king over Gilead, over Asherith, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all of Israel. So here's the question. Who is Abner to make anyone king? Who died and gave him that power? Well, Saul did. Saul died and gave him the power. The question that I really have to ask, and I pray you're asking this too. If Abner is Saul's commander, was Saul's commander of what? His army. And the army was defeated in battle to where even King Saul and his two sons were killed. Why is Abner still alive? Right? Isn't the commander, shouldn't he be leading the way? Shouldn't he be the guy protecting the king? In fact, if you turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 26, verse 5, we see something very interesting in verse 5, and then down, we're going to jump down to verse 15. 1 Samuel 26. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped, and David saw the place where Saul laid, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his armies. So basically, Saul the king is sleeping, and the commander of his army, instead of protecting the king, is sawing logs. Now Saul laid within the camp with the people encamped all around him. Jump down to 15. So David goes in. He makes it very clear that he was there. So David said to Abner, now everyone's awake. He says, are you not a man? Ooh, nice question. I think I am. Okay. And he says, who is like you in Israel? Who else is the commander of Saul's army but you? Why then have you not guarded your Lord, the king, for one of the people came to destroy your Lord, the king? This thing that you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die because you have not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. Now see where the king's spear is in the jug of water that was by his head. In other words, you're the commander of his army. You're the number one bot. You're his bodyguard. You're sleeping. I think we see a pattern here in Abner. We're going to see it continue. He's not much of a warrior. Yeah, he's commanding an army. And you know what? It's easy to be tough when you have a big army, isn't it? I don't know if you were in school, but sometimes there were these guys that walk around like they were all bad. You know, they're bad. And then you get them alone and they're like, well, how are you? It's a pleasure to meet you. It's like, well, what happened? Yeah, in a crowd, you're bad. But alone, you're a pipsqueak. I think that's what we have here. Watch. Hang that on your belt. So Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. Only the house of Judah followed David. Now, David, okay, he was promised kingship, and he's very patient. We don't see him complain. We don't see him going to make battle to take over more territory. We see him going, well, you know, I'm king over Judah, my people. Thank you, Lord. Awesome. I get to serve with my people. He's not impatient. He's trusting that, you know what? So far, everything that God has told me was going to happen, I'm king. I was a shepherd boy, and now I'm king, even if it's over Judah. He is thankful for what the Lord has placed in his hand. You know what? Faith is often revealed when we can wait. Faith is often revealed. It often reveals itself in waiting. When we are impatient, it's often a sign of not having enough faith. When we are patient and saying, you know what, I'm just going to wait upon the Lord, that's an example of faith. But do you see here, by the way, David is a picture of Jesus. He is. See, David will not take any territory by force. He will not take territory by force. Do you realize that Jesus Christ will not take territory by force? He will not. I love Revelation 3:20. It says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." Jesus stands out there and goes, "Is anybody home?" He knows you're home. He stands at the door and knock. It doesn't say, "Behold, I stand and kick the door in because I'm the Lord." No. "Behold, I throw a flashbang in and then I enter the house." No. He's not SWAT. Jesus will not forcibly take your heart. David will not forcibly become king over all of Israel. And you know what? Let's say you already have Jesus in your heart. Awesome. You've willfully let Jesus in. You said, "Jesus, come into my heart." He will not forcibly push sin out of your life. You must surrender your sin. You cannot, and we're going to see this, you cannot make a peace treaty with your sin. You can't. That's what they're going to try and do here in a little bit. They're going to come up with a peace treaty. And as we see, even in the Middle East today, they can say peace, and they've said peace many times in the Middle East. Gorbachev, peace. Where's the peace? It didn't last. Why? Because you can't make peace with sin. You can't do it. Neither can we. We must completely surrender utterly to the Lord, willfully. Because the other thing, just like David, God's not going to chase you for a battle. We fight with God, but he doesn't want to fight with us. That's not his goal. He wants you to surrender in love, not by force. You cannot force somebody to love you, right? Am I right? And so, just like David, David's being patient. He's being very much like a picture of Christ, and where he will not force his kingship over the rest of Israel. But the house of Judah follow David. That's awesome. I pray that HBC follows Jesus. That's my prayer. That's my heart. We continue. Verse 11. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Now, remember what Hebron means? Has two meanings. First of all, the meaning of the name of the city is what? Communion. So basically what David is doing is God has drawn him just to have communion with him. He's drawn him to a city of communion with God. And that's what's strengthening David to prepare him to be king. Listen, whatever God has in store for you that he wants you to do, and trust me, brothers and sisters, we are called to be servants. We are called to be Christ-like. And Christ was what? A servant. He wants to first have communion with us. He wants to spend time with us. He wants to be intimate with us before we can be effective at what he's called us to do. And here is what he's doing with David. David's 7 years and 6 months, only the king of Judah. having communion with God, and that's a great place to be. But also remember that Hebron was a city of refuge, and Jesus is our city of refuge. We're all guilty. We are all guilty, and we deserve punishment. But because we can go to Jesus, he not only has communion with us, but he protects us and he covers us, and we are no longer guilty. But he has patience. He's showing great, incredible patience. Psalm 27:14 says this, "Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." That's good. And so David's heart, he's waiting on the Lord. He's having his heart strengthened. He's not taking his kingship by force. He's being a picture of Christ. Everything's great. Sort of. Watch verse 12. "Now Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Isbosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon." So Abner is basically being an aggressor. They leave their hometown. They go to Gibeon, and they're going there with the military action in mind. He, unlike Jesus, wants to take by force. He'll take the land any way he can get it. Now, he already has. By the way, obviously, Abner is more aggressive than Isbosheth. Isbosheth is more of a introvert. Abner is more loudmouth, pushy. He put him in position because he's now like his little puppet. And so he's being an aggressor here. Who else is an aggressor? The devil. The devil is an aggressor. The devil would take any one of you any way he can by force if he could. And he comes after you and he attacks and he moves in on your territory. So that's what he's doing. He's getting ready to move in and try and take over Judah. Verse 13. "And Joab, the son of Zeruiah." Oh, by the way, Zeruiah is David's half-sister, older sister, but it's his half-sister. "And the servants of David went out to meet by the pool of Gibeon." And what? Okay, first of all, Joab and Abner. What opposites? What opposites? Listen, Joab follows a godly David, awesome, humble, a man who is capable of much power. He's quite a warrior, and he's following him because he's godly. Abner used to follow the demonic Saul. Joab, brave and faithful. Abner, not so brave or faithful. He's a sleepy guy. Joab is for his people. Abner is for himself, personal gain. So they sat down. One on one side of the pool, the other on the other side of the pool. Now, this isn't a pool like we think. Olympic-sized pool, you know, chlorine. No, it's just basically a pond. And so Abner and his men on one side, Joab and his men on the other. Basically, what you have is a Mexican standoff with Jews. No one's wearing a sombrero, but they all got their little yarmulkes, okay? That's the only difference. "Then Abner said to Joab, 'Let the young man arise now and compete before us.'" By the word in the Hebrew, that word compete actually can be translated play or enter into sportsman type activity, but that's not what's going to happen here. There's nothing sportsman about his attitude. "And they arose and they went over by number, 12 from Benjamin, the followers of Isbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. This is so sad. And each one grasped his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side. So they fell down together. Therefore, the place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is in Gibeon. Now, what a tragic loss of life for a sport to play. Let's send them out to play. Listen, you know, if Abner was a man's man, he would have said, Joab, let's you and I meet in the middle and we'll fight and that'll determine. If I'm going to risk a life, let me risk my own life. But he's a coward. Sends his men. You send your men. I'm sending my men over there. You better do something. He pushed Joab's hand. See, that wasn't like, even Goliath, the uncircumcised Philistine, said, hey, I'm the champion of the Philistines. You send your champion. That way no one else has to die. Because he was confident. Abner is a coward. You'll see. Just like, notice in the battles, whenever Saul wasn't, he was always retreating. It was like a retreat, retreat, hiding in the luggage, retreat, retreat, retreat. We're going to see that of Abner as well. Yeah, he's a killer, but he doesn't have quite the backbone of David and his men. And Abner said to Joab, let the men rise and let them go compete. So they arose and they killed each other. So now there's a score to be settled. So look what it says in 17. So there was a fierce battle that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. There's bickering. There's fighting within the fellowship. They've got the Philistines, the Amalekites. They got all these people around them. They're ready to kill them. And they're fighting within themselves. Why? Greed. Greed. Selfishness. Settling scores. Here we have a commander of the army very comfortable with casualties of his own people. It's not good. It's not good at all. But you know what's, if I bring that concept into the church today, we got battles all over the place. Atheists hating Christians. Muslims hating Christians. These people hating Christians. All these different factions hating Christians. And then you come to some churches and the people are fighting within the church. There's casualties all the time. Church splits. People hurt. People cry. Church limping. People outside the church looking in the church and say, well, why would I want to go to the church? Look at they're fighting. They're bickering all the time. I don't have to go to church to get that. I'll go to an ice hockey game. There's always a fight. Listen, it ought not be that way. But you know why there's bickering in the church? Because everyone's got a score to settle. I got my opinion. I got my rights. You didn't like what I liked. You didn't do what I wanted to do. So therefore, it's time to battle. And while the church is fighting, Satan's laughing, and people are going to hell without the church is too busy fighting amongst themselves to deal with those who need to be pulled from the mire. Do you feel like you have a score to settle with someone in the church? Let it go. Put your eyes on those who need to hear about Jesus. Come together as a church. And then when people come to the church, they go, man, there was nothing but love in there. There was unity. There was one mind, one thought, one spirit. I want that. But then some people go into a church and there's fighting and bickering and gossip and backbiting. And it's like, why do I want to go there? There's enough drama in the world. And that's an example that we're seeing here. There's always casualty when there's fighting amongst the brethren. Don't have a score to settle. Listen, we don't get our score until we go to heaven. And your score The tally is how many people you can forgive. That's how you win the game. That's how you look like Christ. Not by holding grudges, causing division. None of those things. Let's continue. Verse 18. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. These three are David's nephews, by the way. So, this is funny. Asahel was as the feet of the foot of as a wild gazelle. So basically, Asahel was a fast runner. He moved, he ran like a wild gazelle. Listen, if you're a warrior, you want to hear strong as an ox, fierce as a lion, not wispy as a gazelle. Oh, he's wispy. Look at him, he's so wispy. So Asahel, but listen, he may be wispy, but this guy, you know, he's got a score to settle. That's what he's got. He's got a score to settle. Watch. So Asahel pursued Abner. And in going, he did not turn to the right hand or to the left from following Abner. So here's Abner. He's booking. Running. So that's what cowards do. And here's Asahel. I'm wispy. And he's catching up to him. He's gaining on him. And he's not turning. He's zigzagging a little bit. I don't know. But he's not turning from one. He's like beeline. He's hooked on his heels. He looks behind him. You're pretty wispy. You must be Asahel. I've heard about you. You're like a wild gazelle back there. And he answers, yes, I am. I am. And Abner said to him, turn aside to the right hand or to the left and lay hold on one of the young men and take his armor for yourself. You know what that tells us? It's quite possible that Asahel was running after him with no armor. I don't know if he thought it was a marathon, it would tag you're it, but he's saying, listen, why don't you go after one of the young guys? I'm a seasoned warrior. I know how to fight. Go get a young guy, and then you'll have some armor, and then come and fight me, so that way at least it kind of looks like a fair fight when I kill you. But Asahel would not turn aside from following him. So Abner said again to Asahel, turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I face your brother Joab? In other words, this isn't a fair fight, man. Verse 23. However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the stomach with the blunt end of the spear, so that the spear came out of his back, and he fell down and died on the spot. Now, it was common practice for when a guy was doing battle, the blunt end of the spear, like if they were being attacked by a large guy or a bear or something like that, what they do is they prepare themselves and they fall back and let the weight of the person or the creature that was chasing them fall on the spear. Therefore, it took little effort. It's quite possible. Because no, why wouldn't he turn and use the sharp end of the spear? That all he did while he was booking, carrying his spear, stuck it in the ground, let Asahel get close enough. He's wispy, he's moving quick, and let him impale himself right upon the blunt end. Because that's a lot of force to get a blunt end to go through you and out the back. The foolishness of trying to settle a score. I got to settle the score. I got to prove myself. Yeah, it leads to death. Leads to pain. And you look like a fool. You look foolish. Listen, Don't chase after settling a score. Don't chase after the person you're angry with. Don't make a scene. Let it go. So it was that as many came to the place where Azazel fell down and died, stood still. Joab, Abishai, also pursued Abner. They want to avenge their brother. Their brother just got killed. We've now got a score to settle. So now they're chasing after Abner. Everyone else is standing there, and they're probably crying on the run. I like, as I read, William Shakespeare says probably what they're thinking, something similar to what's in their heart. If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die? And if you wrong us, shall we not avenge? That's their heart. You've shed blood. We are not laughing. We are out for avenge, for revenge. But that's the world today, isn't it? The world today is bent on settling the score, getting even, and getting revenge. Someone hurts you, that's what you want to do. You'll never guess who said this. Listen to this. Or maybe you will. Gorgeous hair is the best revenge. Ivana Trump. Yeah, I've often thought, man, you got billions of dollars. You can't buy a mirror, dude? Something going on here, man. It's weird. The rest of it looks good. It's just right here is something. And so she says, hey, my best revenge for you, brother, is my perfect hair, which means I revenge every day, don't I? I'm just messing. So anyways, so listen, they're out for revenge. The only difference is these guys aren't wispy. These guys are strong. These are fierce. They fight like fierce lions. They don't catch up as quickly. It takes them more time. But trust me, when they get there, the damage is going to be, would be done. And the sun, continue, and the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Amash, which is before Gaia, by the road of the wilderness of Gibeon. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner. See, here we go. And became a unit and took their stand on top of the hill. Oh, okay. Now Abner's standing there, but he's got, what? His gang behind him. Earlier, he's running. Now he's to take his stand. Now we come to the kindred in verse 26 through 30. Then Abner called to Joab and said, shall the sword devour forever? Basically, are we going to be the Hatfields and the McCoys? Are we going to be forever having this feud, this family feud? Listen, is it not easy to enter into a family feud? Right? I mean, it starts as little kids. You ever been on a long trip when you were little? Right? And you can't stand it. One of you, if you have siblings, is going to start touching. I'm not hitting you, but you're touching me. Please stop. I'm not hitting you. Mom, will you tell him to stop touching me? Stop touching your brother. I'm not touching you. It's like worse. You can feel the power on that. And then, what does your mom say? Don't make me come back there and separate you two. That's what I'm asking for. Build me a wing, a separate wing. Separate us, please. Don't make me have to separate. That's why I'm telling you. He's not touching me. Wait a minute. It's easy to get in a feud. That's funny. But you know when it's not funny? When we become adults. And you're not hugging me. They're not hugging me. And you're not hugging them. and they're your family. There's a quote that says, too often, it seems we hurt the ones closest to our heart. And we let the most foolish things tear us apart. Too often, we're too stubborn to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. The fact of the matter is, you really want revenge? Someone really hurt you and you want revenge? The only true way to settle the score, the only godly way to achieve revenge, is what Josh Billings said. He said this, there is no revenge so complete as to forgive. I love that. So right now, I know that there are conflicts within families. Maybe it's spiritual family. Maybe it's within blood family. It's foolish to hold a score. Well, they did this and they did that. And God's saying, just forgive them and be an example of me. You know, as Christians, we need to be prepared. And listen, I struggle with this as much as you do. One of the hardest things for Christians to do, and we say we are Christ-like. I'm a Christian, Christ-like. One of the hardest things for us to do is to give up our right to be right. When Jesus was on the cross, was he guilty of anything that they accused him of? No. Did he open his mouth? No. He could have come off that cross, and with a word he could have popped all of those men who whipped him and spit on him. All the people who said crucify, he could have popped them like grapes with a word. But he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Have you been hurt? Can you be so much like Christ that you say, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. And then go to them and say, I love you. Romans 12:20 says, therefore, if your enemy is hungry, enemy, not your neighbor, not the people who love and hug on you. If your enemy, the one who hurt you the most, is hungry, punch him in the face. No. Feed him. If he's thirsty, give him some wawa. Give him a drink. For in doing so, you heap coals of fire on their head. I think I just did. No, I'm just coals of fire. I say, man, how would you like to take a barbecue pit full of coals and dump them on your enemy's head? That's not what it means, by the way. Listen, in Isaiah chapter 6, the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated high on his throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple with glory. Well, Isaiah says this, I'm a man of unclean lips, of a people of unclean lips. And the angel came and took the coal and touched to his lips, and that bread brought him a cleansing. Listen, when it says here, heap coals of fire on their head, means you can bring a cleansing to them where they forgive you, where they go, I don't know why you would forgive me after what I've done to you, but man, oh man, I forgive you too. And you know what? This was stupid. Why were we fighting? I love you. And give a hug. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 43 and 40-48, he says, you have heard it was said. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your love your neighbor and hate your enemies. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Listen, why? that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. Why? Because a son looks like his dad. And our dad is a forgiving father. And we look like him when we forgive those who hate us, who curse us, who spitefully use us and persecute us. And we pray for him. David is a perfect example. Saul's like, boom, want to kill you, boom, want to kill you. And David's like, man, I can't touch you. You're anointed by God. And you go, I'm anointed by God. How dare you do that? No, you're king, man. And then he sings a song, how beautiful Saul was. Can you say that about someone who's hurt you? You go to the Lord and say, gosh, that person's so beautiful. We need to. We really need to. If we want to be like David, a man or a woman after God's own heart, we need to. Do you not know? Continue. Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? How long will it be then until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren? Whoa, who's talking here? Abner. Who started this mess? Abner. What were the people doing when Abner came? They were minding their own business. Oh, yeah. When he thinks he has the upper hand, he's attacking. He's bad. When he's being chased, well, how long are you guys going to attack me, man? You know, chill. Take a chill pill, bro. He made the military advance, yet he's saying, how long will you guys keep attacking me? It's like a guy bully picking a fight, and the little guy starts pounding. He's like, why are you hitting me? I don't know. You got like a year's worth of lunch money in your pocket. Side note, real quick. Mark chapter 6, verse 4. Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own house. See, these people are all, they're related. The whole world is against them, and now they're bickering within the house. And then he said this, and I want to clarify this, because it ties together. If anyone comes to me, Jesus speaking, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, yes, listen to this, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. Now, what he's saying here, let me clarify this in this context, okay? It's not a hatred he's speaking of. He's saying if you're not willing to cut ties with someone who is basically just out to hurt or just hates God and is not turning, and let's say you go and you offer forgiveness, they slap you. You offer forgiveness, they slap you. You offer forgiveness. Well, then now you still want to forgive them, but you're just not going to expose yourself to the SWAT, okay? But notice here, when he says, if anyone does not hate his mother, father, wife, children, brother, sister, the qualifier here is says, yes, even their own life. You see, he's not saying we're supposed to hate that. He's saying, listen, oftentimes when you start walking with God, there will come a division. But you still have to offer forgiveness and love is what he's saying. But he's saying there's going to come a separation. You have to be willing to say, you know what? This person just hates God, period. And how do I know that? Because he says this. Yes, even we must even hate our own life. Oh, wait, hold on a second. You mean as Christians, we should be coming in here saying, how you doing? I hate me. Don't you hate you? I hate me. I hate my wife. I hate my kids. No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, I would be willing to lay my life down if it meant it was going to bring glory to God. I would be willing to, let's put it in something that may even happen here someday. Think about being over where ISIS is. Imagine if we lived there and they came in here and they grabbed your family. It's your daughter, and your wife, and your son. And they say, okay, denounce Jesus and we'll let them live. Would you go? Kids, wife, honey, I can't do it. We'll be okay. We're going to heaven. Could you do that? That's what he's saying. I'll give my own life. I'll put Christ first. If you're willing to do that, right now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if I were to ask, are you willing to do that? I'd be willing to bet that everybody would raise their hand. Okay? If you're willing to do that, then why can't you just go, I'll die now. I forgive you. I'm sorry. I'll take the lower seat. Maybe you don't feel guilty. Maybe you don't feel like you were the one in the wrong. But you know what I'll do? I'll die now. I'll die to myself and I'll tell you that I'm sorry. I love you. Can I have a hug? That's what he's saying. And here, they're not doing that. They're fighting. They're trying to settle the score. And instead, the score keeps compiling and compiling. Don't you find that's what happens in your family? Or even within the church? Instead of it getting better, it gets worse and worse and worse. They did this. Oh, now they did this. And now they did that. I'll never forgive them. And God's going, really, dude? I guess you do love your life more than me. And Joab said, verse 27, as God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren. See what it says? It says, listen, even if you hadn't spoken, we're not holding a grudge. We would have stopped by morning. Verse 28. So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people stood still and did not pursue Israel anymore, nor did they fight anymore. Oh, look, peace in the Middle East. No, what they're trying to do is they're trying to make peace where there is no peace. You can't make peace with sin. There's sin here. Abner is sinful. He's still prideful. He hasn't surrendered to God. He hasn't humbled himself before the Lord. But they're going to go, okay, we're going to make peace. But here's what happens. Joab and David and them want peace, but it's not going to last. It's not going to last very long because only one half wants to contain the peace. And you may find that when you go to ask for forgiveness or say you're sorry or make amends, maybe they don't want peace yet. Maybe they still want to attack you. That's okay. You make your heart right, just like David does. It's not about them. It's about you and your walk. But really, when you come to a situation like that, okay, yes, thank you, Lord. I get it. Okay, when you come to a situation like that, your real goal with someone who isn't walking is to bring Christ to them. That should be your real goal. Because until they make peace with God, your peace with them is going to be temporary, and you got to be expecting that. And that's okay. You cannot change your stance. You still have to have peace. If they're not a Christian, then you got to say, you know what? They don't know any better. And if it is a Christian, then you take them to the Word and you say, brother, this is, you know, here's what's happening. Here's what's going on. Here's where our conflict is. But you know what? I want to make amends. So where are you at in your heart? Do we have such a root of bitterness that it's affecting others? In our family, in our church, in our job, in our marriage, in our home. It's our nature, is it not? It's our nature to get angry when someone hurts our feelings. It's our nature. That's why we need a new nature. That's why we need a new nature. Behold, all things are new. Old things have passed away. You need that old thing to pass away. And you know how the old thing passes away? I'm willing to die to myself. I'm willing to be like Christ and give up my right to be right. Easy said, harder to accomplish. But you can begin to pray that God would give you that heart, the humble heart that says, you know what? I can give up my right to be right.